All right. Good morning. Welcome to the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm your host, Yogi Roth, and I am fired up. This podcast continues to feed me in ways that I never expected. I've had some really cool conversations lately. Thanks for the love and support. The last one, Dr. Michael Gervais, high performance psychologist for the Seattle Seahawks. He's currently in Rio working with Team USA women's volleyball team, Kerry Walsh, April Ross, a variety of other athletes. So dive into that one if you want to know about the mental side of the game. But as you know, we are close to football season, and we got a phrase around here, how great is ball? And to me, today it is an absolute gift because we get to talk to somebody who understands that phrase and this sport literally as well as anybody in the entire planet. It is Phil Steele from the incredible Phil Steele Magazine College Football Preview. He's been doing it for 22 years. We're going to talk ball, but really we're going to talk about his path. So I don't want to waste any more time on this pod. Let's bring in the guru himself, Phil Steele. Phil, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, a real pleasure, Yogi. Always enjoy watching you on the Pac-12 Network.
Oh, thanks, man. You know, I always like to set the stage on these podcasts and let people know both of our interpretations of how we met. So for me, how I believe that we met was me as a young athlete at the University of Pittsburgh. And, you know, as a high school player, you read your magazine all the time. But when you're in college for the first time playing, you love picking up this magazine. And I can remember racing to the store in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, picking it up and seeing my name in it for the first time. And I was like, I like this guy. This is awesome. And I think that college athletes have that feeling of love or, hey, where's my name at? This guy doesn't know what he's talking about probably every fall. So I got to thank you for that, man. But I'd love to ask you how your first interaction with me comes about in your eyes.
Well, it was definitely watching the Pac-12 Network is when I first really got to know Yogi Roth. And, you know, I tell you what, you learn a lot about how good a player is or how good an announcer is by the prep work that he does. And the prep work you do is unbelievable. The knowledge is there. And it's one of those things where when I'm watching it, I'm always listening to what you have to say because I know you talk to the coaches, get a lot of good information, and I'll steal some of it from you in the magazine sometimes.
Well, thanks, man. This podcast, as you know, is called Life Without Limits, and it's really focused on talking to people who are going for it, who are charging, kind of like to explore the idea of what does it mean to be human. And for me, I think it means going for it on fourth down, you know, going for it when the stakes are high. And elements in our life, based on pressure, based on culture, based on community, we don't go for it as we get older and as we grow. And you're a guy that clearly has gone for it. This magazine's been around for 22 years. I want to know, first and foremost, about this magazine, because when I read it, and I love reading it cover to cover, it is like a novel, also about your life, when you read in between the notes and read in between the previews and in between the analysis. And I just love to know, when you look back on it, have you ever perceived it as that? It's like, this is my life's work, not just in football, but also about my story.
Yeah, it pretty much is. And it's, you know, the amount of hours that I pour into it, it is probably the biggest, the hugest part of my life right now. You know, I started the magazine 22 years ago. I was writing a football newsletter, and I would buy all the preseason magazines that were out there. And they just never had enough information in there for me, as you can tell by my magazine. So I started compiling the information myself. Somebody came into my office and said, look at those pages you have there. You should turn that into a magazine. So I tried it 22 years ago. We only put out about 60,000 magazines. It was black and white on newsprint. I only covered 88 teams back then. And the folks that got a hold of the magazine were guys like myself, hardcore college football fans, and they needed to have it each and every year. We've gotten to the point now where we're a little more friendly with it as far as the full color. You still get the same two full pages on each team, although it's presented a little bit differently. And, you know, I give you the same amount of coverage on a team like Idaho that we do on USC and Alabama, two full pages, everything in the same spot. I personally start writing the magazine that Sunday after Thanksgiving, and I finish it June the 2nd. And in between then, there's a lot of 75 to 80-hour work weeks. I figured out this year I spend 2,000 hours, or basically half a year, putting this magazine together. And then the staff adds in another 10,000 hours, helping me get the prep work, and then, of course, proofing the magazine. We proof each page about five times to make sure it's about 99% accurate. So it really is a huge part of my life. And then when you get to the football season itself, I'm working 100 hours a week. I've got 12 TVs in front of me watching all the games. My wife will tell you, she'll say that if it's not college football, I don't know much.
Well, where did your love for this game start?
It definitely started when I was a kid. You know, my dad was a guy that liked football and liked, you know, and naturally the Cleveland Browns were very popular in the household. But also, if I wanted to spend a Saturday with my dad, I had to watch football, and believe me, I loved it. And he would bring home one of my favorite days of the year, Yogi, was when I was probably 8 years old. He would take me to the magazine store and say, you can buy any three or four magazines you want. And it would be tough because there were so many magazines on the newsstands, but you'd pick them, and then boom, I'd be in my room the rest of the week compiling power ratings on the teams. It's just been something I've loved since I was a little kid.
Wow. Now, did you play a lot of sports? Were you a jock? Were you an athlete?
You know, growing up, naturally, you play all the sports. In high school, you know, just dabbled in some of the sports. I wasn't a major player. You know, I was not 6'2", 230 pounds or anything like that. But, you know, played a little bit of the sports. Naturally, your free time, you're always playing football, baseball. I remember doing book reports for school when I was in grade school. And I think I did my first four book reports on a football player autobiography. And she said, you can't do the football anymore. So I did one on baseball and then basketball. And finally she said, it's got to be something besides sports. And I was just like, really? So, you know, it's sports has just been what I've been about since I was little.
I think that's the beautiful thing about, you know, sport and performance is that there's so many different roles. You know, you don't have to be Larry Fitzgerald. You don't have to be Jared Goff. You know, you can play, you cannot play, you can find a niche for yourself. Want to dive into more about your dad. You write about that in your magazine, about how you'd like to dedicate this magazine to him and obviously your entire family. But, you know, a lot of these listeners have watched, I did a documentary called Life in a Walk about my dad and explored the relationship between fathers and sons. And I'd love to know more about him. And when you take a look back on it, the areas where he influenced you, because clearly not only do you love football, you just referenced that story, but you have a grit, a desire to do the lonely work, the boring things longer than other things. That is a capacity that I've never even been around. I mean, it's insane, man. And I'd love to know if that's the guy that you learned that from.
You know, I would think so. My dad didn't have a job like I have. He worked for the gas company, so he had a 9-to-5 job, going out on the streets. But he was a sergeant in the Marine Corps, so there was always that discipline. And so growing up, there was discipline. There was I always wanted to impress my parents. I've always been an achiever. I've always wanted to achieve to say, you know, I'm doing my job. I'm doing the right things. I've always been wanting to please in that way. And so I'm just one of those achieving types. So I've always wanted to please them. And then, like I said, the discipline that he brought in to my life was huge.
Wow. Yeah. I just think that it's such a, I mean, when I read this magazine, it screams discipline, it screams love, it screams passion. Was there a day when you were kind of getting this thing going where you were like, wow, this is actually going to be my job? And what was that day like, if so?
You know, I don't know if there was a specific day like that where, because believe me, there's not a lot of time to even breathe in this, putting this magazine out with the football season. You know, my summer's my fun months, but I did not foresee when I started that first magazine, Yogi, I did not think it would get to the level that it's gotten right now, where basically every broadcaster, every writer in the country uses the magazine, and it's pretty much, you know, regarded as like the Bible of college football right now. I did not see that coming when I did it. In fact, you know, the first year when we hit the newsstand, I imagine a lot of folks picked it up and put it right back down because it was just way too much information, you know, crammed into the space. But people have grown to love it.
Wow. Do you? What else were you doing? I mean, I know you're a writer and you're obviously a gifted journalist. But when you're getting this thing going, what's your other job, if you had one, to make sure that you can make ends meet as you were doing this?
You know, when I was writing a football newsletter and then selling it as far as, you know, people wanting my forecasts on the games and things like that. And that was doing pretty lucrative at that. And then the magazine came around and that's turned to be clearly my passion because it's just so much fun covering it. But it's always been, I thought growing up when I was, you know, a kid, I thought I was going to be either an accountant or a statistician. But to be able to do this in football, that's incredible because football is a passion of my life.
You know, I get the chance to talk to a lot of college kids during the season when we get on the road, and they all, you know, ask about how hard it is to hang on to your dream. you know, here's you who grew up playing, watching the Browns, watching Saturday college football with your pop and living this dream. What's your advice to kids that are asking? Because you do have this dream job that a lot of football fans look at, especially up and coming. Say, man, I want to create my own thing. And now people can, you know, the tools are there where they can create their, you know, WordPress blog for free or their magazine for free. But it's that desire that I think a lot of people would be curious about.
Well, the one thing I found, and at one point when I was doing the newsletter, I had a print shop as well. So I had a print shop for about 8 years to help print my stuff that I was putting out. And I would see so many people come into the print shop with their new business, and what they wanted was quick rewards. I want to be rewarded quickly. I want to take money out of the business quickly. And generally, when you heard somebody talking like that, they were not going to be in business a year from now. It was the person that was willing to pay some dues, put in the time and effort, and not expect to be rewarded right away. That, to me, is the key, because I know myself, as far as I started my business back in 82, and the first 7 years, I didn't make a penny. I was taking out loans, credit cards, everything I could, telling folks checks were in the mail. There was just not enough money coming in. So it took me a good 7 years to actually turn a profit. And I put the due diligence in and just kept thinking, you know what, it's going to be worth it. It's going to be worth it. And then it ended up working out great. And then, you know, once you start making money, it's easier to make money at that point. So it's just I think the main thing is don't come in and expect to get there right away. Come in and expect to that you have to put the work in. There's going to be disappointments. There's going to be doors closing in on you. But just keep going.
That's awesome, man. You know, we're in this era of, right, Snapchat, Instagram, you know, tweets, you know, X amount of characters or less. And your magazine is like the antithesis of that, right? I mean, you dive in. Do you feel as though like you're contributing to the element of society of getting people back to, you know, taking some time and having to dive in and not just getting everything they want at their fingertips?
I do. And, you know, in fact, Yogi, I think that my magazine beats the internet. You know how the internet's putting some newspapers out of business right now, and you know, newspapers are folding. But if I'm going to put in the month of August, I'm going to put a quiz up on my website on philsteele.com, and it's going to ask you 10 football questions from 10 different teams. And you could have the choice of looking it up in my magazine or going online and doing it. And I think if you looked them up in my magazine, like what was the score of a game from 3 years ago? Who's the career leading rusher for this team? Who's the starting left tackle for this team? You would find the answers to that information in my magazine in about 30 seconds. Whereas if you go to 10 different websites and try to look around and find it, you're probably going to take about 10 minutes. So the magazine right now is actually superior to the web as far as finding information in college football, because if it's important and it's something on college football, we put it in the magazine, and hopefully we get people to, I know myself being a little older, I love to have a hard copy in my hands of a magazine, and hopefully we get a lot of people in that frame of mind.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, Pac-12 Network's lead researcher, Ryan McGrady, and I, you know, we nerd out on this thing the minute we get it, and I got to thank you for kicking off a copy to me earlier this year. But I'd love to dive into your day, because, you know, you just look at your Twitter timeline, right? And it's not as though you're obviously watching games like everybody else when it's the season, but you do the work. I mean, just this morning, I check you out. What are you doing on Twitter? And you get off the phone with Cliff Kingsbury talking about his team for over an hour. What is the research like for you? Because it's not like you're just Googling who's coming back as a starter and who's supposed to be good.
Yeah, it never ends, really. You know, I've got like I said, I've got a staff that helps me. We've got about 10 to 15 employees that work here, and then I do what I call the Phil's book pages, or they're my notebook pages on each team. So they will help to contribute to the notebook pages, go out and read the articles, put the notes in and things like that. When I talk to the coach, I capture all the coach's notes. We spend an hour going over the team because I go over every single player, even the fifth string walk-on, because sometimes you uncover a player that is going to play back there, and I get a little note on every player, strengths, weaknesses, and that really helps in the magazine. Well, also during the season, we have a service that sends us the articles from every paper that covers all the teams. So at the end of the year, what I do in my first write-through process of the magazine is I've just watched the season. I've gone through the season. I've got all my information in my head. But now I read back through the season day by day, and it gives you a real good flavor. Give an example. South Florida last year. they started out 1-3 under Willie Taggart, and I knew how the season went at the end of the year. But when I'm rereading the season, it was interesting that after their loss to Memphis, which dropped them to 1-3, the writers were like, "There was Willie Taggart at his press conference, still saying how confident he is in this team, how he really believes this team is going to turn into something, and yet all we see is another loss for Taggart." And then what happens at the end of the year? Taggart reels off 7 out of 8 victories, and you know, when I talked to Coach Taggart in the spring, I asked him how that made him feel, and he said, yeah, it was good. It was a good feeling to actually have that accomplishment. So it gives me a real good flavor for each team. And then, you know, we just scour, like spring. I watch every single spring game that's out there. Love it when a guy like yourself does the work and is just feeding me information as to what's going on in the spring from the team. Do all the spring reading on it. And even here in the summer, you know, I get the stack of reading every day, try to go through it all. It's just a nonstop process. But I do have to admit, Yogi, summer months, I'm only working like 50 hours a week. So it's almost like I'm on vacation.
Well, as you should. And 50 hours a week, by the way, is more than a lot of people work in an average week, man. How do you describe yourself? You know, when you get asked that question, whether you're on a vacation and you're 50-hour, you know, work weeks or whatever it is, you meet somebody who maybe doesn't know anything about college football and they say, hey, what do you do?
I work on football. it's varied as to what I do working on football, whether it's watching games, like you said, talking to coaches, whether it's doing the reading for college football, whether it's compiling my 9 sets of power ratings, whether it's doing predictions, whether it's writing articles for ESPN the magazine, ESPN the Insider, doing TV and radio shows. I do a lot of those. I'm going to do this summer alone, Yogi, I'll probably do about 400 radio shows across the country, which is a lot of fun. And sometimes you learn a little something about the team by the questions they ask. Sometimes there's a player that just got suspended or something that maybe you didn't know about because I'm trying to cover 128 teams. So you actually pick up a little something on the radio from that circuit. But I'm a guy that works on football, and I also spend a lot of time with my daughter. And, you know, Savannah is 10 years old now, and she's growing up way too fast. I grab her by the shirt all the time. I go, don't you grow up too fast. It's 6 words I give her by, but she's not listening to me. She's 10 already, and that's probably the best part of my day. You know, you work all day, and then you spend it like 3 hours with her, and you're all of a sudden you're a 10-year-old for 3 hours. It's just a lot of fun.
Is she like the daughter from Remember the Titans, of the defensive coordinator?
No, I can't get her into football yet. I'm trying. I give her subtle hints. In fact, she's into Irish dancing and gymnastics, and we just play, you know, when we're together. So I've tried to get her there, but her favorite color is pink. She's a girly girl, although, you know, I'll still tackle her from time to time, and, you know, always teach her that you never be too sure. There's a tackle coming somewhere.
I love it. Got to give her the Seahawk tackle, right? Right.
That's right.
Keep that head out of it. How about being an analyst? I mean, you are an analyst. You ever think about calling games? Because clearly you have this ridiculous depth of knowledge.
Yeah. In fact, I'm sort of toying with possibly doing that this fall. The only problem is when you do a game, you know, I'm watching 12 games all day long. So if it's a Saturday game, I'm going to basically miss 36 games by the time you know, go to the site. Plus, if you're going to really call a game, you got to go there a day or two early. You got to talk to the coaches. You got to get all your information, then actually call the game. So I'd be missing out on a lot of games. But I'm talking about maybe doing like a weekday game here in the MAC because it's local. It wouldn't take me long to get to. And I would love to do the color analyst for one of those games. My buddy Michael Rega does a lot of play-by-play, and it would be really neat to do a game with him.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would be glued to that one, regardless of whoever you're calling, man. I'd love to dive into your memory. You know, how does your mind work? You know, because you have not only just 22 years, anybody who grew up around sports, we can recall box scores that we read in the newspaper at age 8 on a Sunday when the Yanks played the Sox. I don't know why we just can, but I'm curious about how your mind works.
Yeah, the memory is great in that respect, and most of my memories come with football. You know, I remember when I was 4, and this is dating myself now, by the way. When I was 4, my mom took us to see a movie at the theater, and you know, it was December. I was already a big Browns fan back then. I knew the Browns were playing in the championship game. I just didn't know when, because when you're a kid and you're 4, you don't really grasp what day it is. And come home, and my dad's happy. I mean, my dad was a sergeant in the Marine Corps. He was never, like, smiling and happy. I'm like, what's up, Dad? He's like, the Browns are beating the Colts. And I'm like, really? I turn around and look at my mother like, really? A movie? It wasn't on TV. It was just on radio, but that's what you did back then. And, you know, I can remember things like that clear as day, you know, when it comes to football.
Wow. Oh, what's the most interesting thing someone has told you about your magazine when they just either stopped you on the street knowing who you were, or maybe they didn't know who you were and you were just standing next to them at a, you know, at an area where they're selling magazines?
There's been, you know, first of all, I don't get out a lot, Yogi. So the chair here at my desk, it's worn pretty good. And people always say, you know, should I call you on your cell phone? I'm like, you know, you're better off reaching me on my work phone because I'm always at work. But yeah, when I'm out and meet people, I was just at Mac Media Days, I think, the other day. And it was a very interesting story. It came from one of the writers that's also on the Football Writer Association committee, and we do the Football Writers All-American team. We have a big conference call. We get writers from all the conferences that call in, and they give their opinion of each player, and then I usually chime in with my input. And he said he offered up a MAC player, this was about 4 years ago, a defensive lineman, and he said he was a little nervous about offering him up as a player that was worthy. And then I stepped in and said, yeah, he's, you know, Chris Jones, Bowling Green, really good player. And he goes, at that point, he felt vindicated. You know, he did his work, and everything worked out well. And he ended up becoming first-team All-American. I thought that was a really neat story. It was something that made me pretty happy.
Anything ever go the other way when a player or a coach or a former player comes to say, hey, man, you had that wrong that year. You didn't take me to do whatever.
You know, I haven't had a lot of people say you picked that wrong, but I remember one time, Yogi, and this is, it's funny as far as my radio shows go. When I look at my shows for the day, a lot of times I'd be like, why am I doing three shows in Oregon today? There was one year Washington State was coming off the Rose Bowl, and I had picked them last in the Pac-12 the next year. And I was wondering the whole year, why am I doing so many radio shows in Washington? And I remember getting ambushed one time. I call in. I'm like, hey, it's Phil Steele. And they're like, okay, we'll have you on in a minute. And then I'm listening to the introduction. He's like, well, I've been talking about it all week. You've heard it on the air. We've got him on today. Phil Steele, the guy that picked your Rose Bowl Washington State Cougars last in the Pac-12. We're going to open up the phone lines for you as well, or Pac-10 back then, I should say. And boy, you should have heard the people on the line. they weren't very kind. But in the same token, Washington State actually did finish last that year, so I felt vindicated at the end of the year. But they didn't have me back on as a guest. It wasn't. It's not as interesting radio at that point.
Oh, that's their loss. No, I mean, I can remember that. I can remember looking at your magazine. I think my sophomore year when I was playing, I started a bunch of games. So the junior year magazine, I was pumped about. You know, it comes out, and we had a guy that some people may have heard of named Larry Fitzgerald come in as a true freshman. And, you know, it took him about all 3 seconds to beat me out. And then the next year magazine, when I looked at it, I can remember looking at it, and it served as like this little motivation of like, okay, all right, Phil, I got you. And then, of course, Larry goes top 5 pick in the NFL draft. So you definitely nailed it with that one, fortunately and unfortunately. But I want to talk about some of your predictions, specifically the college football player for this year, man. Again, you got a Pac-12 team, or not necessarily again, but you have a Pac-12 team left out of your prediction for the Final Four. And a lot of Pac-12 fans, obviously, are listeners here. When you look at conferences as a whole, and then, of course, the Pac-12 conference, what's the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, and it's actually more of a strength of the conference rather than a weakness of the conference, because when I look at the Pac-12, just like last year, remember last year I had Stanford as my number one surprise team in the country. They just missed out on getting the playoffs, that doggone Northwestern loss. But they end up with 2 losses. They end up missing out on the playoffs, and yet they finish number 3 in the country. When you look at the Pac-12 and the other conference, I picked another conference to miss the playoffs this year. It's the Big Ten. And what's the two things those two conferences have going in common? They both have 9 conference games, which makes it a little bit tougher to navigate the season with as few losses as you can. And when you look at the Pac-12, most of the big boys are playing each other. As an example, USC takes on the top 3 teams out of the North. I'm talking about Washington, Stanford, and Oregon. They all play USC. USC plays all them. So there's going to be a lot of that, and it's such a deep conference. I'm going to go all the way to the bottom of the conference of the Pac-12. I think Colorado is a legitimate bowl-caliber team this year. Oregon State, with their quarterback now in Garrison, I think they're a vastly improved team. So even at the very bottom of the Pac-12, you're looking at bowl-caliber teams. And I just think in the 9 weeks, 7-week grind with the non-conference games that they play, it's going to be tough for any team to navigate their schedule, which are all, if you look in the front of my magazine where I've got the schedule strength, Pac-12 dominates the top 20 schedules up there. It's just tough to get through an entire season with, one loss or less.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I co-sign on pretty much everything you wrote, other than in my playoff prediction, I've got Stanford going. I think they've got the ability to take a run and just a hair above everybody else in the conference. But I'd love to talk conferences because this is like the debate that happens all the time. And unfortunately, the powers that be don't have any bowl games where the SEC and the Pac-12 align, unfortunately, outside of the playoff. It just doesn't happen. You looked at those two conferences, you ranked them 1 and 2, SEC 1, Pac-12 2. With the depth of the Pac-12 that you referenced, and I know the strength, obviously, of the SEC at the top, what's the rationale behind ranking the SEC 1, Pac-12 2?
Just looking at the power range, the raw talent that the SEC has, the amount of NFL mm-hmm. players they produce, the defensive lines, the Pac-12 is still the best. You look at the SEC West, for example. A lot of folks go, hey, was it tough picking the winner of the SEC West? I go, it was tougher picking the 7th-place team in the SEC West. Because who do you put down there? Do you put a Texas A&M? Do you put an Arkansas? Do you put a Mississippi State that every year is picked 7th in the SEC West and yet every year wins 9 or 10 games recently? It's just a brutal conference. So, the SEC has been rated the best conference in college football by myself for probably the last decade, and they have lived up to that once again. The talent there is just – I'll give you an example, Yogi. When I was doing my defensive lines, and it's a long process for me, the entire magazine. Like I said, I spend about 6 months working on it. But one of the things I do in one of the months, I believe it's the end of April, I go through each position. And I have a file card. I have a 67-pound vellum, 8.5 by 11 sheet with all the information on each unit in there. So I'm doing the defensive lines, and I believe I did the Pac-12, the second conference. And on the top of the stack after I did the Pac-12 was Utah's defensive line. So I get to the third conference, Utah's defensive line, still on top of the stack, 4th. Utah, 5th. 9 conferences, Utah's defensive line still on the top of the stack. Get to the SEC, Utah finished 3rd. And, it's just one of those things where the SEC is loaded on defensive line. But I still love Utah's defensive line.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's the perfect just truth-teller rationale, And I always think as an analyst, we got to take out the emotion, right, first. Is okay, mm-hmm. What are the facts, whether the listeners like them or don't like them? And I feel you there. And to me, it's just I'd love to see a matchup. I would have loved to have seen Stanford play anybody last year. I think they could have competed in any of those games. And hopefully we get our opportunity this year. I want to talk about UW next. This is kind of the sexy team that a lot of analysts are picking. You have picked as well as one of your top teams, one of your top surprise teams. Clearly we know what they have coming back at quarterback, running back, left tackle, this defense. But what makes you think that they can make the jump from where they were last year to represent the Pac-12 conference in the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, one thing I want to reference that just popped in my head about the conferences and is that the one thing I know that my magazine's not prejudiced towards any team or biased towards any team or conference is I've had all 128 fan bases mad at me at one point or another. So then you're not biased.
Yeah, agreed, man. I feel you there.
But with Washington, I'll tell you what. Chris Peterson's first year. I looked at that defense, and now granted, when a first-year head coach comes in, he's got to learn the strengths and weaknesses of the players. Players have to learn new systems. You're going to struggle a little the first year of a new head coach. Washington gave up 411 yards per game. I was unimpressed because they had 6 guys that headed off the NFL that year. So last year, my expectations for Washington, I had them tied for 4th. In the North, that's where they finished. They were 4-6 at one point, barely made it to a bowl game, barely won the bowl game. What I came away really impressed with was that defense, though. They were a young defense. They only had 4 returning starters last year. They had guys like Azeem Victor at linebacker, Bierra at linebacker. The secondary I love with Buda Baker, Sidney Jones, Kevin King. And this year they lose a total of 6 Letterman off the defense. They've got 27 Letterman returning. Now, I'll be honest with you, my ratings are slanted towards defense. I could probably give about a 52% of the grade towards the defense, 48% to the offense, which I think differs from a lot I think most folks look at a quarterback, running back, and receiver. That's how they judge a team. But I actually put a little more weight on the defense, and we have been the most accurate magazine the last 18 years. So defensively, I've got Washington right at the top of the Pac-12. Then you look at them offensively. You got a quarterback like Jake Browning, who was a true freshman last year, went through your typical true freshman type of year, but now he's back as a soft Miles Gaskin, rush for 1,300 yards, almost 6 yards a carry. He's back. He was a true freshman last year. Their top playmaker on offense might be John Ross. He missed last year with injury. He's a wide receiver, punt returner, kick returner, so I like the skill set. I like the offensive line, having 9 of their top 10 OLs returning. And as much as I was wondering after Peterson's first year, hey, is this guy in over his head? No, he's not. I like what he did with the Washington team last year, and I know what he did with Boise. So I think you have the head coach, you've got the defense, you've got the experienced offense, you've got a schedule where they get Stanford at home, they get USC at home, they get Arizona State at home. They only lose 14 Letterman off last year's young squad. And generally, when I look at coaches, that third year is the year that they've got 3 recruiting classes. The bulk of the squad has been recruited by them. All the other players that have stayed are completely bought into the program. I really think Washington has the chance to be something special this year.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I can't wait to get there for training camp and see where they are in the offensive skill position. You know, what John Ross is like, if they can get some chunk yardage, some big, easy, not necessarily easy, but big plays, big chunk plays, just to, you know, make those games a little less one possession-esque like they've been, I think, with this team. But when I look at what you just said there, I love what you talked about defensively. I couldn't agree more. Is there, you know, in your book, you have so many different elements that you evaluate. Is there a, you know, in just in your experience, is there a hidden stat, I'll call it a hunch stat or something that you look at, necessarily a stat or a hunch concept that you look at and say, this is what's going to separate this team? And if so, in your history of being around this game for as long as you have been, curious what you think that special sauce is that separates maybe two teams that return the same amount of starters at the same positions, have recruited really well, have solid coaching staffs. What do you think the difference is? Because this is an era of college football, right, where one loss can be one possession, and that can be the difference between the playoff and not.
Yeah, it's I think part of it, I really put – there's so many factors I put into a team, and, you know, I could make a case that, you know, teams coming off a lot of close losses the previous year have a big year the next year, or teams that maybe – outgained their opponents last year but had a losing record are going to be in for a better year. Teams with veteran defenses, teams with veteran quarterbacks. There's a lot of factors. In there, I also have career starts on the offensive line, which I value a lot. I think it's an important stat. But really, it's a combination of all of them because I've had all of them turn effective. And, you know, the first metric I used, Yogi, was back in 1995. It was my turnovers equals turnover article. And once again, it was black and white on newsprint. But I had looked up like 6 years of research, and it came up with a 75% of the time teams had better records if they had negative double-digit turnovers and weaker records if they had positive. That has stayed the course for 22 years. It's still right there at the 75%. But I've put in all kinds of other factors, the YPP factor, close wins, close losses, and I keep adding to it every year. So there's a lot of different factors that go into the team each season. And schedule plays a big part as well. Who you play and where you play them. Like Iowa this year, for example, their 5 Big Ten road games come against teams that were 10-30 in the Big Ten play last year. They get all the tough teams at home. They are actually a better team than last year's team, which is sort of fortunate, and they've got a chance of winning the West again this year.
So let's talk about one of the teams that have one of the toughest schedules in the country in USC. I mean, I just think it's so unique with Clay. You know, he's kind of, you know, handled chaos 3 different times. You know, when Lane gets fired, and then Eddie Orgeron leaves, and then the Sark scenario. This is the first time there isn't any drama. What do you make of this team, him, and obviously the first 4 games that they have with Bama kicking it off, an 11 a.m. game at home against Utah State after that physical matchup, Stanford on the road, and then a quick turnaround on a Friday night at Utah?
Yeah, the overall schedule is crushing. And to be honest with you, I didn't know what I was going to expect out of Coach Helton. And then I did get to talk to him this spring, and I think he's got a firm grasp on this team, really knows what's going on. And really, when I went through the team with him, They are deep at running back, receiver, offensive line. I like what they have at quarterback. Defensive line is my major concern for the team. They're definitely not as deep as they were last year. They're a little thin, a little young. They need to stay healthy. But the linebackers, DB, special teams are good. And this was an interesting thing in my magazine, in my power poll in the front of the magazine. It rates the talent of the teams. I rate them the number 15 most talented team in the country, yet I have number 25 in my top 25 at the start, so you're probably scratching your head a little bit, but it comes down to that schedule. Not only do they play all the tough teams in the South, but as you touched on, they've got to play, you know, that tough opening slate. They've got to play the top three teams out of the North in Washington, Oregon, Stanford. And, oh, by the way, they play Alabama and Notre Dame in the non-conference slate. There's nobody in the country that plays a tougher schedule. So you hope that that defensive line, they are thin, so they need to stay healthy on the defensive line to be active. But I know going through teams, what I do every year, Yogi, is I look at the games in a month, and I rate A games and C games, you know, games where you put your maximum effort and weakest effort. It's going to be tough for USC to play that many A games this year, and they basically have an A game almost every week of the season.
Yeah, I know you nailed it. I mean, even those games where in the past it would be, okay, we can, you know, maybe show up in the second quarter and do well, Utah State, call it Colorado, it's just not the case anymore. You know, and it's going to be interesting to watch the narrative of them. Because I agree with you. I think Clay's the right guy for what they went through. And USC, as you know, recruits itself. So if you have a clear philosophy, clear approach, clear staff, and just can get going, I think you can get the thing rolling. So excited about that. I'm curious. You talk to a lot of coaches. Who's the most interesting guy? Who's the guy that you get jacked up to talk to, or maybe the most nervous to talk to?
One of the funnest coaches to talk to is Ruffin McNeil, and also over at Rice, Coach Bailiff, because you get all these phrases that you're like, you know what, I never heard that phrase before in my life, and it's just some good old Texas phrases, and I just love it. You know, you end the conversation, I'm just like, what was that one again? You know, so, you know, it's definitely a lot of fun talking to those guys. Now, nervous for one respect this year was probably Jimbo Fisher, and the reason for that was I had put the magazine out and picked Florida State to win the title. So my nervousness came in the fact that I hope I'm going to like what I hear when I'm done with this conversation. And fortunately, I ended the conversation and liked what I heard. They're three deep at every position. Safety, they're only two deep, but this is a loaded team, and very happy to pick them. But probably the coach that I value the most every year is clearly Coach Bill Snyder at Kansas State. I don't think there's a coach out there that has accomplished what he has accomplished. You look at the fact that when he walked into Manhattan in 1989, you know, this was an outpost of college football. It had the worst record of any college. And he turned that team into a national title contender. That's amazing, the fact that they sell out at home, and they're still playing in Manhattan, Kansas, which is out in the middle of nowhere. And I tell you what, when you go through the team, almost every single player on that team, you know, he's a good kid. He's, you know, a hard worker, and that's how he recruits his players. So I'm just honored to even talk to Coach Bill Snyder, because I think he's one of the greatest coaches of all time.
Yeah, really looking forward to that week one matchup. They go to Stanford. I think it's going to be really cool because two of the classiest guys in the game that we know, him and Coach Shaw.
Yeah, Coach Shaw. You know, at one time I got lucky when I was talking to Coach Shaw. I think it was like 3 years ago. And his team was starting the first week off a bye. And so he actually had extra time on his hands, and we got to chat for definitely like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And he just talking football with that guy. He is he's a smart guy, knows his team inside and out. Love the way he's building that team. And, you know, I'll admit, when he took over for Harbaugh, I was thinking they're going to fall down. But, no, and he is an excellent head coach and a very smart guy.
Yeah, you know, I've always said that we'll get you out of here in a couple minutes, man, but I think David Shaw's top five coach in all of football. And my ranking, you know, you have to give Belichick the crown. I look at Coach Carroll next, and even if I'm a little biased, I think people are going to put him in the top couple. And then you look at Nick Saban, Urban Meyer, and then to me it's David Shaw. And I think if you asked any GM or owner in the NFL, they'd want him, and every AD yep. in the country would want him. And I just think he's an absolute gift to the game and to college and not leaving, because he gets opportunities every year to take off.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. And, you know, I love the fact that he goes on the, like, the NFL network or wherever he goes and talks to NFL, and he can because he is a – you talk about a student of the game. This guy knows it, not just Stanford, not just Pac-12, but he follows football, and you got to love that.
Okay, so Heisman, you have a vote. Obviously, on the West Coast here, people are still a little frustrated with what happened last year, Christian McCaffrey not winning the Heisman. For me, the only frustration was that I believe 15% of the Heisman voters voted prior to the Pac-12 championship game. I pray, and I'm assuming you weren't one of those. Love to know your process of voting and the responsibility you feel and what you thought about last year.
Well, I tell you what, I take a great deal of responsibility. If you look in the back of the magazine, I'm basically on every award committee out there. I get a lot out of it. I'll sit in on the Mackey Award, and we talk all the top tight ends in the country. Then you sit down with a quarterback award. You go over all the top quarterbacks, the Football Writers Call. You hear each writer from his own conference speak the who they think should be there and why. And you really get a lot of information on all the players. And naturally, I watch every single game. And I'm not one of those guys that goes to bed early on the East Coast. I'm up till 1 o'clock in the morning. I even watch that stupid Hawaii game at 3 in the morning just to make sure I don't miss anything. And I like it when they're on the island or on the mainland as opposed to the island because their games aren't as late. But I think overall, you know, when you look at the Heisman, I would never, ever vote early on the Heisman Trophy. And I thought the race was an incredible one last year.
Yeah, no doubt. I love that about you. I mean, look, if everybody hasn't seen his magazine, take a look. I mean, you go everywhere from NFL draft to freshman recruiting rankings, which I love because you nerd out about it. Last couple ones before you get out of here. When you evaluate players, how do you do it and what do you evaluate?
First of all, the eyeball test, you know, when you're watching a player. The second thing is really what the coach says about them, you know, because the coaches are quite honest with you. They tell you the good guys, the bad ones. And sometimes you could take a guy that's got all the height, the weight, the measurables, the speed, and the light bulb's just not on, you know. And so in that respect, you don't always go with the guy that's got the best height, weight, speed. You go with the guy that's most productive on the field. But then if that light bulb does come on, boom, you got yourself a player. So I tend to do the eyeball test watching the game, but really rely on what the coaches are saying about the players because, you know, they're with them in practice every single day, and they'll give you information you have no idea about, and it's huge for me as Turner's personnel. Now, as far as the draft part of the guide goes, what I did this year is I took my top players for the draft. I sent the list to Mel Kiper. I sent the list to Todd McShay, sent the list to Phil Savage, sent the list to Gil Brandt, got input from everybody on that list, moved people up, down, added people, took off people, bounced off a lot of different people around the country. And I think the NFL draft part of the magazine is very good. It's quite up to date, and I think it's very solid.
That's awesome, man. When you look at the idea of competing, you know, I always end these podcasts with just a couple specific words to get your immediate response. When you hear that phrase, what's the first thought that comes to mind for you?
Competing?
Yeah.
Would be being the guy that does more than everybody else. As an example, in the magazine business, there's nobody that works harder in the magazine, but it's impossible. I can't imagine anybody spends as much time with college football as I do. Even head coaches, they're out doing, you know, benefits and things like that, whereas I'm just plugging away every day, and to me that's competing.
You know, I always like to reference this idea of a flame, and I think every individual has a flame that is either burning and raging. You know, it's like a campfire and we lean into it and we're warming our hands up around it, and sometimes that flame is lower, right? And we need a new log, we turn over all the coals, whatever it may be. If you had to step outside of your body right now, I mean, you just got through this magazine, you've published it, everyone around the country is reading it, and obviously you're doing a lot of these interviews talking about the season, which is about to happen. How would you describe your flame, Phil?
Right now it's burning pretty good. It's, you know, I share this with a lot of people. You know, when they give me a nice compliment during the off season, I go, you know, there's those 100-hour work weeks, and it's March, and you're slaving away and it's late at night and you're wondering, why am I doing this? And then I'll just play some of the stuff that somebody said as a nice compliment to me, and it gets me going. Now, this time of year, it's pretty easy because, as you said, you know, you go on the radio and everybody's going to say nice things about your magazine, so it's a lot easier. You're pretty fired up about everything, but it's during those 100-hour work weeks when sometimes you need to replay some of that, and once it gets your flame relit, then all of a sudden you're good the rest of the week.
What makes you feel most alive, man?
Number one is actually spending time with my daughter, and the second would be the accomplishments of the magazine. And, you know, I'm not a guy that takes a lot of vacations or anything, so for me it's seeing the magazine and knowing that the magazine is out there and that so many people use it. I've had so many writers come up to me and say, you know, I use this thing every day, or guys on the radio example, and they go, don't stop. You have to keep doing this because it really helps everybody out in terms of preparation. So that right there is really what it's all about for me.
What do you love about college football? You know, from the Saturdays you talked about watching with your dad up until 12 screens every Saturday for X amount of hours a day, a weekend. What do you love about it the most?
You know, the pureness of it. I also love the rivalries. I love the fact that you've got 128 different stadiums, 128 different types of crowds, 128 different types of fans. I really love that. And I also like, you know, I actually, if they ever start paying the players and it becomes one of those things where, you know, now you're turning into salaries like the NBA and the NFL, boy, I tell you what, I would probably lose my love for the college football. I love the fact that it's, you know, a pure sport, and boy, the individual rivalries are amazing. And that's something I really enjoy when I'm doing the 400 radio shows over the summer, is just to listen to the different fan bases and what they have to say about their team. And that to me, that's exciting.
Oh, and of course, we ask everyone who comes on this podcast the same question at the end. I'm sure you've been told no a lot in your life. So curious about what your thoughts are around the word limits.
Yeah, there really are none, I don't think. And, you know, look at me. I'm just a kid from Cleveland, Ohio that grew up when, you know, just went to public high school and didn't really do a lot, and boom, you know, just work. So, and I would never have dreamed to get as far as I have, as far as the magazine goes. So to me, there are no limits.
It's awesome, man. Well, look, we got to option like the script of your life and put this into like a feature film, man, because it's awesome. It really is. And or write the next book. I mean, you've done so many. I mean, honestly, you inspire, athletes, obviously you educate fans, coaches, players alike, but you know, you represent the greatest game, in my opinion, on the planet with the utmost respect, man. And I admire you. I mean, when I can remember just getting, you know, a tweet, a text, an email, any note from you, I was like, wow, this is one of the cooler feelings I've had as an analyst. So thanks for all the work that you do, man. It's been really special.
Well, I appreciate that a lot, Yogi, and I appreciate what you do. Like I said, a lot of analysts, when they do the games, you don't always get all that information, but you do your homework on every single game you do, even the spring games, and I really appreciate the work you do.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, people can find you on Twitter. Is that the best way, Phil, to get a hold of you?
Yeah, find me on Twitter, @PhilSteele042, @PhilSteele042, and then, of course, the website, which is PhilSteele.com.
I love it. Oh, so I got to ask, what is the 042 for?
Here's the honest answer. I didn't even know what Twitter was 4 years ago. So somebody on my staff tried to get @PhilSteele, and it was taken. They came up with three numbers, and that's the number that's up there. And I if you change it, I think you lose your followers, and I've got like a little over 100,000 followers. I don't want to lose those guys.
No, you definitely don't. Well, thanks, man. You definitely are going to gain some from this podcast, and I'm a huge one as well. So thanks for the time. I know you got a busy day, man. So head back into those offices in Cleveland and keep grinding away, man. But much love, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, Yogi, it was a lot of fun, and I'm going to have to check out some more of your podcasts because I really enjoyed this today.
Yeah, check them out. We really appreciate it, man, and have a great day.
All right, thanks, Yogi.
All right, you got it. So there it is. That was Phil Steele. The creator of Phil Steele's College Football Preview, 22 years. What I loved about his path was that he's just a guy that just grew up with his dad, Hank, watching games on Saturday and just wanted to be around it and find a way to celebrate it. And I think that's our jobs for people that are in college football, celebrate the game, coach, educate the viewers, and just showing utmost respect to what we all believe is the greatest game on the planet. And, yeah, Phil's really cool, man. I can remember that first day looking at that magazine at 19 years old, and I still look at it now. So take a look at it. I think, as always, as we end these podcasts, there's a challenge. I think that the challenge that I elicit from the conversation with Phil is find out what you love and relentlessly chase it. I mean, he's clearly done that. He's loved college football. It was a magazine. It was a newsletter that didn't do anything for 7 years. He was just trying to make it work. And all of a sudden it breaks 22 years ago and it's black and white and it's a newsletter. And now it's the most respected magazine in all of college football. And really, you can argue in all of sports. I don't think if you looked at any other sport, there's a preview magazine with the depth, the knowledge, the soul, the heart that his magazine does. So find out what it is that you truly love and chase it and relentlessly get after it, man. And, you know, Phil's a great example for that. So thanks a lot for listening. Keep reviewing, dropping notes on iTunes, sharing it with your friends. The last few have been awesome. We're just getting rolling now. College football season is going to be a blast on this podcast. We're going to bring in different people who have a story connected to college football. We're going about their path. You'll learn about their opinions about what's going on throughout the season, and much, much more. So as always, as we end this podcast, the reminder that the only limits that we have in life are the ones we set ourselves. Peace.